Welcome to the Send Network Podcast, a resource for pastors, planters, and everyday missionaries looking to multiply new churches in places of great need. And now your hosts, Jeff Christofferson and Tim Wheat.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast of the Send Network. This is episode 2, and I am Tim Wheat, co-host, along with my friend, Jeff Christofferson, and we have got a fantastic interview for you today. Jeff will be interviewing someone. In fact, as you listen to this, just be prepared. You're going to laugh. You're going to hear these two guys go back and forth. Hey, Jeff, with that in mind, just tell us a little bit about who you're interviewing and what the direction you're headed in.
Well, yeah, I had the fortune of speaking with His Edness, Ed Stetzer, and we had a great time. The guy is really smart.
He's unbelievable, and he's a good friend, and he knows how to banter back and forth, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. it was a good thing.
Yeah. So in the course of this conversation, you guys covered a lot. I mean, you would chase one rabbit, come back and chase another rabbit. But is there anything in particular that came out of this conversation that you want our listeners to kind of really listen for and pay attention to?
Well, Ed's got a unique ability of kind of being a bit of a futurist. I asked him a few questions on the future of church planting as he saw it. And he talked about an ancient practice that is really gaining momentum and has to gain momentum, and that is intentionally bivocational church planting. And so that became an important part of this conversation.
Yeah, I really love the fact when you guys discuss that it really raises the credibility and the validity of bivocational church planting. So with that in mind, let's just jump into it.
Many of you have read Ed's work, and he has been thinking about church planting for most of his adult life. And Ed, when you're just kind of taking a look at kind of the post-Christian environment that we're surrounding ourselves in, and how do you see the future of church planting kind of operating in that right now?
Yeah, and I think there's futures, Jeff. I mean, I think the reality is most church planting looks a lot like what church planting looked like in the 80s, just with less effectiveness. In other words, harder to plant a church mm-hmm. now. You know, you and I have been planting churches a long time. I started my first one in 88. When was your first one?
86.
Wow, yeah. Okay. So, you know, and to be honest, I mean, in 88, I was in Buffalo, you know, but by the time I kind of got the hang of a lot of this, I mean, I was 21 in Buffalo and planted my next church. I mean, we planted a church, had 200 people at the first service, planted two daughter churches, had 200 plus at the first service. That's harder now than it was then.
There's less evangelicals that are you can shake loose to come and be a part of that.
And even too, I mean, everyone who would come to a really cool church if there was one in their town already is going to the really cool church.
And no one's not feeling guilty for not going to church.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a shift in our culture. But that's still the most predominant way. I mean, people could listen to Bob Logan's Toolkit from the 1990s, and most people are still doing it that way. Mm-hmm. But then there are more lanes opening. So that future's still going to be there. And I'm not saying, you know, that it's going to be like lose all effectiveness. The majority of Americans and Canadians are actually nominally Christian. So that means there's going to be people who have a Christian memory to which you can appeal. They maybe think a little bit they should go to church. Boom. But the reality is the fastest growing category is secular people, people who have no religious background or really just have moved on from it. So that's growing about 1% per year.
So what kind of churches are attracting that group of people?
Well, you know, different models. So you've got some who secular people aren't immediately thinking of going to a church building. So they may be in a missional incarnational community, meeting in a coffee shop or a house church, meeting in a high rise. So they're not like driven by constructs, ecclesiological constructs of past generations. So for them, it's going to look like that. For others, it's going to look like, you know, wanting to go to a more traditional setting. So, you know, so it's a mix. So when people say, what's the future? It's the right question, but it's what's the futures. So what I would see still to come is something that's very big in the past. You know, we talk about bivocationalism like we were just the first ones to discover it, right? So people have been planting churches bivocationally. I mean, Baptists and Methodists, right? I got an article coming out in a Duke History Journal.
A Duke
on Baptists and Methodists on the Western frontier, 1795 to 1810. all bivocational.
Right.
Only church planting movement on the soil of America in history takes place among bivocational. Well, now, Hugh Halter writes a book. We've got other good resources. North American Mission Board's talking about bivocational. That's just a rediscovery of an ancient practice.
Yeah.
But that's a huge part of the future, because ultimately, every time there's a breakout in rapid church planting, it's by bivocational or lay-led people.
Yeah.
So, but it doesn't mean we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So North American Mission Board, evangelicals, and others have to acknowledge that we're going to plant churches like we've been doing it for 20, 30, 40 years, but we're going to also have bivocational, which, by the way, we've been doing for hundreds of years, but we're going to have different models and approaches. You know, multi-site is a whole different category. You know, some denominations sort of see multi-site as planting churches. I tend not to, just ecclesiologically. I'm for multi-site, but some do. And so now people are planting sites, you know. So all these things are going to be in the future, and the present future is already here in some ways, but even what I expect, though, is this, and the big picture, is that attractional methods, which are still the most common, I affirm, we both love, but attractional methods will decline slowly over decades as people who are attracted to religious things declines as well.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I've spent most of my life planting in a very secular environment.
You have indeed.
And just watching the attractional methods and people pumping dollars into
it.
Oh,
huge launch. Toronto, a lot of 50 mailers in Toronto, and yet six people show up.
Yeah, 50,000 mailers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I should have said 50,000 mailers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's definitely a diminishing result coming from a lot of that. So there's been a lot of adaptation to an attractional, like a more of a missional attractional.
Yeah, kind of what are people attracted to, you know, the both end thing. And what I would say, too, is that I think we both think that there are places, and even in Toronto, where people are using direct mail and having success. But everyone would have to, even if you're a direct mail company, you got to agree there's a diminished return.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing then is you're saying as a direct mail company, well, that's why you need three mailers. You know? But at some point, if you went to a completely other religion society, now, I guess secularism is in a sense a worldview. So if I go to Indonesia and I send a mailer out to a Muslim neighborhood, I'd expect very little to no response. Well, I think ultimately we may get there. We're not there yet, but 30, 40 years from now. Current trends continue. Keep in mind, 1% per year, more Americans, and it's slightly different because of Canadians started out more secular as well, but not dissimilar in size. So 1% per year. So 30 years, now the majority of people are actually not just nominally Christian, but intentionally secular. That's a huge shift.
Yeah. One of the reasons I really enjoy talking with you, Ed, is your missiological background. There's a few people that can kind of engage that way, and when you think about Donald McGavran, for instance, when he was talking about his homogeneous principle and how we've sort of polluted that in the evangelical subculture and kind of said basically his original idea was how do we construct the least amount of barriers between us and the gospel, least amount of cultural barriers, we've taken the homogeneous principle and said, how do we reach people like us, mostly?
Yeah.
When you think about McGavran's original idea, when he came up with that idea, how if a church planner had that in his brain, how would he sort of adjust his strategy?
Okay, so a couple things. Homogeneous principle is the idea that people prefer to come to Christ without crossing social, racial, economic barriers. Okay, makes sense in a lot of ways. Spanish-speaking Latinos are more likely to be reached by Spanish-speaking Latinos. The language factor is a huge issue. So, and in some ways, the homogeneous principle is incredibly obvious. Koreans are more likely to plant churches to reach Koreans. That just makes sense. Now, here's where it gets tricky, though. That began to be used in majority culture. And so then you had people who would be labeled and say, and when it's majority culture, it's a little tricky. I get today that if you're a Hmong immigrant, who's maybe, depending on your language as well, but you're going to be more likely to be in a Hmong immigrant church. And if you're, even if you're a first generation or second generation Latino, you might be in a more Latino-driven context. And as an Anglo, I don't think I should say, that's wrong. You should come with what I'm doing.
Right.
But I do think as those in majority culture, when we begin to say, here's our demographic target, and it looks like a white young family, I mean, I think that speaks some volumes as well. Now, I'm actually not offended, and I shouldn't say I'm offended. I'm less concerned when an African-American church says that in a historic African-American context where African-American leaders are empowered and energized and elevated in historic African-American churches. I was just with Charlie Dates at Progressive Baptist, a very famous church, and you know they're elevating African-American leaders. Okay, so they're not sitting around saying, man, if I could only be around more white people in church. But I think for majority culture people, you know, you're Canadian, I'm American, but we're both Anglo, okay? For majority culture people, I think we have a responsibility not to say our target is that excludes everybody else in a way that's different than minority culture people. So I think you have to be careful that if your Mill Creek Mike is actually – Mill Creek is a town I planted a church in. If your Mill Creek Mike looks like you, you end up at church with people that look like you. And so the challenge is how do you broaden that? Now, I preach every week in downtown Chicago at a church called Moody Church where I'm the interim pastor. And
it's a new church, I guess.
It's a small, struggling church. Yeah. It's no, it's a wonderful church. You know, 70 nations represented there. And so it's a beautiful thing. It's a real testimony. People assume, because it's Moody Church and it's been around for century plus, that it's a white church because he was white, but it's not. It's a multicultural church. And I think that's a good thing for us to see more of. The homogeneous unit principle is far in the rearview mirror for Moody Church and many others. And all I would say is if you're majority culture, I think your role may be a little different in culture than a first-generation immigrant or than somebody whose community – the church has become the safe place where they elevate new leaders.
Yeah, and really, it's really a point. It's really the direction that we're putting our focus on. If we're focusing on ourselves
That's
and
good.
We're going, how do we reach more people like us versus looking at the people that we're around and say, how do we adjust ourselves so that the people that we're next to don't have to jump so many hurdles in order to get in contact with us?
That's awesome. That's a good way to put it, too, because his point was, bridging, building bridges.
Right.
Actually, talk about Bridges of God is one of his very famous books. And so those are some cultural barriers that have to be bridged. But and again, I think as majority culture people, we have a unique responsibility to bridge those cultural barriers and to invite people who are different than us across them.
Yeah. So again, it becomes the people of God becoming the servants rather than asking other people to sort of jump through.
Yeah, amen. That's a good way to put it. And I think that can be also true. I mean, that's very, very much a basic missiological principle. Mm-hmm. When people walk into your church, they shouldn't have to change cultures
that's
to hear
right.
the gospel. And so that's something, you know, in our denomination is not always affirmed by people. Maybe lip service they will, but in practice it's often not. So I think that's a reminder for all of us that, you know, Paul said, I become all things to all men that by all means possible I might save some. And he says, I do this for the sake of the gospel. So it's not about me or you. It's about the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're on mission, we got to get uncomfortable.
So yeah, I'm a new church planner, and I've just been listening to all the stuff that we're talking about. And
you're a new church planner? I think that's awesome. Do one more.
That's right.
One more. My wife has said,
no
six
more.
Is enough.
That's
six
right.
is enough. So, anyway.
Yeah. So I'm a new church planner, and I'm just listening to this conversation and thinking about, man, I've been sort of thinking of what my ideal church would be. And in my brain, I've sort of constructed this thing. It might be a better idea to get out of our brain a little bit, out of our ideal, and start looking at the people that we're planting among and figuring out what they need.
Yeah, the how of church planting is in many ways shaped by the who, when, and where of culture. Again, the how of church planting is in many ways shaped by the who, when, and where of culture. And if we've fallen in love with a church model rather than a mission context, what we end up doing is bringing a church model to a context that doesn't take the context in mind, which we would fire an international missionary for doing. We train international missionaries to go into culture, to plant the gospel, to see a church emerge, to evangelize into existence a church that actually in some ways reflects the culture around it. Now, I get that your established church may have a hard time doing that, but as church planters, for established churches, they get stuck in tradition or traditional right? This is the way we've always done it, right? But for church planters, they get trapped by technique.
Mm-hmm.
And technique is, well, this is the way that so-and-so did it.
Right.
And so what happens is we fall in love with the way we do church more than the people to whom we are sent, and we end up exporting a technique or a model when the reality is, man, God's used the megachurch in Korea and the house church in China. Man, we got to hold our models loosely and our gospel firmly.
Right.
And there's going to be different kinds. Churches are going to look different.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, what do you think about there are sort of three things that a church planner needs to really be involved in. One is understanding who they are. So they're not trying to be the next whoever.
Yeah.
And so
the whoever changed since we started, didn't
exactly.
It was Rick Warren.
It changes every 5 years.
Like, I don't even know who it is today. I can't keep up.
Yeah, so you really have to have an honest understanding of who you are. Then you have to understand where you are, where you're planting, because it's different. And then you got to really understand whose you are in the sense you
oh, that's good.
You are Christ's, and in a posture of submission, saying, "I understand who I am. I understand where I am. Give me, as I have my eyes, I've been researching, I've been looking. Give me your idea for this area," and then all of a sudden you have a vision that's no longer something that you've learned from or found from somebody else. Is God's given it to you? You got a passion for that puppy.
That's awesome. Did you write on that? I remember you say. Have I read you say that? Is that in Kingdom Matrix?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. I remember you going through that construct. And I remember really liking it.
Yeah.
I think that's so key because there's a level of different awarenesses here. Yeah. It's not just one thing.
Yeah.
It's multiple things. And none of us are just one thing. You know, mm-hmm. we all. So, I recognize, when I plant a church, I just left this church I planted in Tennessee. Man, I'm a New Yorker. I mean, I grew up as a non-Christian, an Irish Catholic home. I came to Christ, and wasn't, immediately engaged in ministry. So all these things shape me, and so I sort of go into a church plant, and I've got all these things. And then some of them I need to say the Lord can use. Some of them I need to leave behind.
Right.
Right. And so, when I was younger, I didn't. I planted my first church. I mean, I didn't have a model in mind. I just knocked on doors, told people about Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the second church, I kind of bought myself a Hawaiian shirt, got some shoes without socks, and started reaching people in Erie, Pennsylvania with 10 feet of snow a year. And, I realized that, maybe this isn't the missiological path. I would have thought that. I did a missiology degree later. But again, I think the so much of church planting is dying to yourself. So much of the Christian life is dying to yourself. So you die to yourself spiritually. Paul says, I die daily. He says, I mean it. I die every day.
Right.
So we have to die to ourselves personally in our spiritual life, but also methodologically, missiologically. We have to lay it all down so we might evangelize into existence churches that proclaim the gospel and are shaped by the gospel, not by our preferences.
Well, I think that's a great way to land this one because when we're thinking about the assignment that God has given us, sometimes we become too much of that. And we realize that same God loves that community and the people that are in there, and He's got a plan that makes sense for them. And our job is to sort of figure that out. And so, thanks, Ed, for
thank you, my friend,
hanging out.
Good to see you again. Yeah, many years. How many? We used to be those young church planters.
That was before you colored your hair and I got mine all gray.
That's right. No judgment. No judgment being right. Passed around. But I remember sitting in many tables, maybe even a Tim Hortons in Canada, saying, "And now you're in charge. You're in charge of church planning and making significant work here." Thankful for what the North American Mission Board has increasingly become, being focused on church planting, making that your fierce focus.
Yeah.
Thankful for that. You guys have really become the leader, and I appreciate that so much.
Thank you, Ed. God bless.
So again, Jeff, that was a great interview. You guys squeezed a lot of information into a little bit of time there because you covered a lot of ground. One of the things that I just wanted to wrap it back up with was a statement that was said that in the way of planting churches is to be shaped by the good news or the gospel and not our preferences.
Hmm.
I think that you guys were talking along the lines of to hold our models loosely.
Right. Yeah.
You want to share a little bit more about that or elaborate that on?
I mean, sometimes I think we forget what church planting is about, and we think it's about constructing a worship service, and so we begin to build models that kind of move us in that direction. Really, the best model is the one that fits the planter and fits the context, and there's a sort of a red thread that connects those three. And so if a person really is looking at how do I bring the gospel to a context and then that fits me, and they're going to come up with a model that makes sense. So,
yeah, so I thought about the application of that, and many of us through the years have heard this phrase about the message doesn't change, but the methods need to change. And so I felt like that's what you and Ed were really encouraging us to think through as culture has changed, that we've got to continually evaluate these methods against our preferences in order to effectively reach the culture with the gospel.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we recognize that we have probably a wide range of people listening to us today, but I think that particular conversation applies to planters, even to planters wannabe, those who are considering it, pastors and church leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that in mind, I would just like to remind folks that if you'd like more information, if you're considering or exploring church planting, whether as a church planter or even as a leader in a church, we can send them to where, Jeff?
Well, you can send them to nam.net and /send me. And if you'd like to do a hairstyle like Ed Stetzer has, you probably want to go to clairol.com, and there's a good color kit there for you.
Well, I can't think of a better insight to land with than that. So again, thank you for joining with us. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the SEN Network Podcast, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other resources to assist you with joining the mission of God, check out namb.net/send-network or email sendnetwork@namb.net.